So guys, what I want to do this morning is give you some perspective. Let me propose to you that the reason work and family are the two that seem to have the greatest tension is because they both require the most time at the same time. Did you ever stop to think about that? Now you get out of college, you start your career, you're trying to climb the corporate ladder or start your business at the same time. You know, you get married to your college sweetheart or your high school honey, and you're starting a family, and those kids are demanding. They require a lot of time, you know, and they both require the most time at the same time. And guess what? When you finally get the big house, and you finally have money in the bank, and you finally get a little time, you don't need it because the kids are gone, right? It all seems backwards. We rush through our life to get all this stuff, and then when we got it, we didn't really need it. When we needed it, we didn't have it. You feel that tension? See, let me give you the end of the story. If you look to the right side of that diagram, as I said, we've had the privilege of counsel couples for almost a quarter of a century now, and there's an interesting thing that happens. We struggle with building financial capital. There's three types of capital, men, that you will leave to your family and to your children: spiritual capital, social capital, and financial capital. Most of us spend most of our time worrying about the financial capital, building a huge house and forgetting to build the foundation upon which we're going to leave it. Socrates says, "What mean you, fellow citizens, that you turn every stone to scrape wealth together and take so little care of your children, whom one day you will relinquish it all?" Did you catch that? We're spending our time and our energy, and I would propose we're spending a disproportionate amount of our time and energy building financial capital, and we're forgetting to spend the time to build spiritual and social capital into those who come after us. I've sat with too many folks doing estate planning, watch tears stream down their eyes as they talk about the $10 million of financial capital they have they don't know their kids, that they're trying to leave it to. Richard Swenson, in his book Margin, says, "We need room to breathe. We need freedom to think. We don't have time to listen, let alone love, and our relationships are destroyed by velocity." Think about that. We don't have time to listen, let alone love, and our relationships are being starved to death by velocity. We're rushing through our lives. We're having trouble with this whole issue of balance. And I've been there. You know, you've been there maybe. You come home and your wife introduces you to your kids. You know, "Hey, Russ, this is Clark." You know? So there's a big challenge. And the question becomes, how do I balance the issues of life? How do I slow this thing down? Like somebody said, if you win the rat race and you're still a rat, what difference does it make? And it's my observation that sitting right in the middle of that diagram is your money. You cannot avoid the issue of dealing with your money. Because I think that's the crucible, that once you kind of get that under control, you have a chance to begin to get some balance in your life so you don't get to the end of your life and have any regrets. You don't get to the end of your life and realize you built this huge pile of financial capital and never spent any time building spiritual and social capital into those that you might even leave the financial capital. So that's our dilemma. Would we agree that is the challenge? How do we do that? Many of you have already gone through that. You're past when your kids were young. Your kids need to understand this. You know, if you've got kids in their 20s and 30s, they need to understand that, hey, it's not all it's cracked up to be. We're going to talk about retirement here in a little bit, but the point is, we're sitting here struggling with, how do I balance life? How do I have some time when I need it, so I don't get out here and have this great big house of financial capital and have not built any foundation? I'm going to talk to you about three things I think you have to do to have a chance to have balance in your life. And let's agree that, you know, balance is only that elusive thing when you're swinging the pendulum through. Okay, you never quite arrive, but if you can get the pendulum to not swing quite as much, I think you've got a shot. And you might want to write this down. Remember, children are the living messages you send to a time you will not see. This is very important stuff we're talking about. Children are the living messages you send to a time you will not see. So the issue becomes, how am I going to try to get some balance in my life so I can invest in my kids, so I can invest in my grandkids, so I can cultivate the relationship with my wife, and not get out here and say, "Guys, I've got a great estate, but I don't know my family." See that too often. Well, there's three things you have to do. The first one is you have to think right about your money. okay? And there's four areas you have to think right in. And the first one is you have to understand that money is not a measure of self-worth. I have people come up to me and I give them this handout and they say, now, Russ, make sure you tell me what goes in these blanks. Some of you are anal and you'll want to make sure you fill out the blanks. So for those of you that are that way, you know, we're under 2A, okay? Seriously, I have people come up to me. I didn't get this one filled out. Will you tell me what to put in? And some of you are just drawing airplanes and doodling on it. And I understand that too. So, guys, money is not a measure of your self-worth. We as men need to understand this because we have bought the lie. See, the choice we have is either the truth, and I would propose to you that the truth comes from God's word. Thy word is truth. John 17:4. John 8:32 says, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Well, you have a choice. You either believe the truth of God's word, or you buy what the world tells you. Right here, the world tells you, no, your self-worth is your net worth. What's the first thing we say to men when we meet them? What do you do? Where do you live? We start trying to stack everything up. We start trying to see, hey, I'm worth something because of what I have. But money is not a measure of self-worth. Your financial net worth, the car you drive, the clothes you wear, the house you live in, has nothing to do with your worth. You're worth an incredible amount because you were made in God's image. And he sent his son to die for you. That Passion play has really been the rage lately, and it depicts that. But let's come back to it. Guys, if you don't believe this, if you don't believe that money is not a measure of self-worth, you will get out of balance building a bigger and bigger pile of stuff. And you know what? Will Rogers said it right. We spend money we don't have to buy things we don't need to impress people we don't even know or like. That's why we have so much debt in this country, because we've got to look, you know, our self-worth, our image. And a lot of times our dads have contributed to this, you know, like, you know, there's pressure from the generations in front of us to look a certain way. We've got to get it through our heads that money is not a measure of self-worth. The Bible says, you think it's your ability to make wealth? No, I, the Lord, have given you the ability to make wealth. Guys, there's a whole bunch of jobs that need to be done in the world, right? Some of you in here make a lot of money. Some of you make this much. I mean, it doesn't matter. There's all kinds of income levels. We work with clients at every income level. And income is a function of your vocation. Your vocation is a function of the way God's made you. So how can what you have for net worth be a measure of who you are as a man? But we really don't believe that. And therefore, we run faster, we spend more time at the office, that we're building a bigger and bigger pile. You know how I learned this principle? Julie and I vacationed in Kansas. Any of you ever vacationed in Kansas? Is that new? Hey, there we go. Like, I don't know if it was said, but I did grow up in Kansas, and I can say that now. I went to Kansas State. I can also say that since we finally played football up there after 100 years. But it was interesting. I went to the Georgia-LSU game, the next day I was driving over to Auburn. My oldest son goes to Auburn, so we were headed over there to go to a basketball game, and all the LSU fans were going home, right? And I put my K-State flag up, and they all started honking and giving me high fives and everything going down 85, because obviously beating Oklahoma kind of helped them a little bit. But be that as it may, when the kids were little, we would head off to Kansas for vacation, see grandparents, and sometimes we'd go on over to Colorado. You know, see, Kansas gets a bad rap because everybody's headed to Colorado. And so they just kind of endure Kansas. But here's what happens. When we got west of the Mississippi, you can't do that back east here because the roads don't go anywhere. But when we get east of the west of the Mississippi, we like to get off the interstates and drive on two-lane roads and see the countryside. Any of you ever done that, you know? And go through the little towns and eat at the local cafes where the police cruisers are and the, you know, the menus on the grease board, and they look at you real weird because they know you aren't from around here. But we were driving down these two-lane roads, and we come to these little towns, and every little town was the same, I began to observe. And let me just paint the picture. You're driving along, and here's the big white house up on the hill with the Hereford cattle out front with the white fence, you know, 40 acres. The guy's probably the banker in town. He's got the financial capital. He's got the big bucks. You know, and he probably, he thinks he's tough stuff. He's got a big self-image. And you drive through town, what happens? The houses get smaller. You go across the tracks, the houses get really small, and you're out of town. 30 more miles down the road, what happens? Same exact thing. You know, big house, you know, this guy's got all this stuff. And then it dawned on me. And here's the question I have for you. The guy in the one town had built the financial capital, and he thought he was really something, but the guy in the next town didn't even know that guy. So the question is, if you're out of balance trying to build this big pile of stuff to feel like you're worth a lot, how many people will ever know what you have? I'll tell you, man, it's only going to be a limited number of people. Maybe 100, 200, maybe 500. You know, there's some big muckety-muck in San Francisco that doesn't know Ted Turner. I mean, think about it. This is played out all around the country. So does it make sense to be out of balance to impact the limited sphere of people, or should we be using our money to buy time, to impact our families and impact other people that's really going to matter? See, I would propose to you that a life well spent is a life that earns and uses money to buy time to impact people, doesn't just build bigger piles. So remember, the principle of limited sphere, no matter how much you have, and no matter how big your house, and no matter what you drive, only a limited number of people are going to be impressed by that. So the question you have is, you know, why am I doing this? Money is not a measure of self-worth. Let's get off the treadmill and quit pursuing having a whole bunch of stuff to impress a limited number of people. I like this article. I have to just get it out here and read it to you. Mr. and Mrs. Thing are a very pleasant and successful couple. At least that's the verdict of most people who tend to measure success with a thingometer. When the thingometer has put the work in the life of Mr. and Mrs. Thing, the result is startling. There he is, sitting down, luxurious and very expensive thing, almost hidden by a large number of other things. Things to sit on, things to sit at, things to cook on, things to eat from, all shiny and new. Things, things, things. Things to clean with, and things to wash with, and things to clean, and things to wash, and things to amuse, and things to give pleasure. Things to watch, and things to play. Things for the long hot summer, and things for the short cold winter. Things for the big thing in which they live, and things for the garden, things for the lounge, things for the kitchen, things for the bedroom. Things on four wheels, and things on two wheels, and things to put on top of the four wheels. Things to pull behind the four wheels, and things to add to the interior of the thing on four wheels. Things, things, things. And there in the middle are Mr. and Mrs. Thing, smiling, pleased as pink with things, thinking of more things to add to their things, secure in their castle of things. Well, I just want you to know your things can't last. They're going to pass. They're going to come to an end. Oh, maybe an error in judgment, maybe a temporary loss of concentration, or maybe you'll just pass them off to the secondhand thing dealer. Or maybe they'll wind up a mass of mangled metal being towed off to the thing yard. And what about all the things in the house? Well, it's time for bed. Put out the cat. Make sure you lock the door so some thing taker doesn't come and take your thing. And that's the way life goes, doesn't it? And someday when you die, you're only going to put one thing in the box, and that's you. Men, money is not a measure of self-worth. We got to get that through our head, and we got to quit trying to accumulate. The reason we have so much consumer debt in this country is because we're buying all these things to impress these people. And why? Money is not a measure of self-worth. Secondly, now we're down to what? B? Is it B? Money is not a reward for godly living. Many times people get out of balance because they think, you know, if I do certain things, then I'm going to be blessed financially. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but money is not necessarily a reward for godly living. God does work on a reward system. He does promise us rewards from obedience, but they may not be monetary, and they may come a whole lot later than we think. That's a whole other topic when we talk about God and his concept of rewards. But let's go to number C. Money is not a guarantee of contentment. How many of you thought 10 years ago, if you're making what you're making today, you'd be content? Anybody? The question is, are you content? See, most of us think, if I just make a little bit more, then I'll be content. You can't make enough money to be content unless you learn to be content where you are. See, financial planning is real simple. If you look back up at that top diagram, look in that middle part where it's got the, you know, income, and there's five uses of money, you know, living and giving and taxes and debt. Guess what, guys? I'll give you, this is Financial Planning 101. This is free for the coming to breakfast. If you have a positive number in the margin category, where it says margin, that's the key to financial contentment. Financial contentment has nothing to do with the income box. Nothing to do with the income. You can't make enough if you don't learn to spend less than you make. And guess what? I've done this for 25 years. I've never seen one person not have enough income to meet their needs. Not one. So you have enough to meet your needs, because the Bible happens to say that. My God shall supply all your needs Now, maybe not your wants, and maybe not to keep up with the Joneses and all that. But the key to financial contentment is spending less than you make, having a positive number in the margin box. It has nothing to do with income. Many years ago, I had a client out in California, right after starting the business. And I'll never forget, you know, God taught me this principle. I went out there to see this gentleman. He was making $600,000 a year. That was 40 times what I was making at the time. So if you can divide, you know I was making $15,000. Julie and I were living in an apartment up off of Northridge. I came home from this meeting. I put my arm around Julie and said, honey, I learned a very important lesson. Financial contentment has nothing to do with what you make. It has everything to do with spending less than you make. This guy was spending $700. You say, now, Russ, you know, I'll try it. Let me make $600 and I'll just, you know, I guarantee you that I won't spend more than that. Guys, I'm just going to be candid with you. If you do not learn to spend less than you make, whatever you make, you can't make enough. You say, yeah, I'd like to try it, but let me tell you, it just works that way. You say, how can a guy making $600 spend $700? Well, you just buy bigger toys and you just buy more stuff and you just do more things. It's a principle. Financial contentment comes from spending less than you make, not how much you make. So what's the issue here? Why get out of balance to try to go make more or just keep pursuing more when the key is spending less? You know, it's the dreaded B word. My wife didn't like the budget word, so we call it planned spending. You call it whatever you want. But eventually, you have to spend less than you make. But I've noticed that most men just think, if I run a little faster, work a few more hours, make a little... And you know what? Most of you are in white-collar jobs, and that's true. But I also believe the 80-20 principle works. You know, 80% of what you're making happen, you're doing with 20% of your time. You've got time to focus on your kids and on your wife. And the income thing will take care of itself. Let me read you another little article here about contentment, because I think it really speaks to us as men in this country. An American businessman was at the pier of a small coastal Mexican village when a small boat with just one fisherman docked. Inside the small boat were several large yellowfin tuna. The American complimented the Mexican on the quality of his fish and asked him how long it took him to catch him. The Mexican replied, only a little while. The American then asked, well, why didn't you stay out there longer and catch more fish? The Mexican said he had enough to support the needs of his family. The American said, well, but what do you do with the rest of your time? The Mexican fisherman said, I sleep late, I play with my children, I take a siesta with my wife Maria, I stroll into the village each evening where I sip wine and play guitar with my amigos. Have a very full, busy life, senor. The American scoffed. I'm a Harvard MBA. I could help you. You could spend more time fishing with the proceeds, buy a bigger boat. And with the proceeds from the bigger boat, you could buy several boats, and eventually you could have a fleet of fishing boats. Instead of selling your catch to a middleman, you could sell directly to the processor. Eventually opening your own cannery, you would control the product, processing, and distribution. You would need to leave this small coastal fishing village and move to Mexico City. And then to L.A. and eventually New York City, where you could run your expanding enterprise. The Mexican fisherman asked, but senor, how long will all of this take? To which the American replied, 15 to 20 years. But what then, senor? The American laughed and said, that's the best part of all. When the time is right, you would announce an IPO, sell your company to the public, and become very rich. You would make millions. Millions, senor, then what? The American said, then you could retire. You could move to a small coastal fishing village where you could sleep late, fish a little, play with your kids, and sip wine. Men, we laugh, but we're doing it. Let me just be candid with you. We have bought the lie of the world, and we are out of balance because we think money is a measure of self-worth, and we think if I just make a little more and I just drive a little hard, then I'll have it. Had a guy tell me, he says, Russ, I'm going to work really hard, and then I'm going to retire at 45. I said, how old will your kids be then? Don't miss it. Mine are 19, 17, and 14, and it goes just like that. They're gone. And you can't go back. So the challenge is, I got to think right about my money. I've got to slow this thing down. I got to try to get some balance in my life so I can focus on what really is going to matter in the long term. The last thing we need to think right about in our money, and for men, this is a big one. Money is not a measure of success, guys. If you don't get anything else out of this morning, I want you to leave with a new definition of success. Money is not a measure of success. If you look up the definition of success and wealth in Webster's, it says it's making good progress in accomplishing a desire to end a reign. Has nothing to do with money. You see those words down there? You see riches riches and wealth have to do with money. Prosperity and success have to do with accomplishing a desire to end a reign. Have nothing to do with money. And there's a verse in the Bible that I really like, Joshua 1:8. Says, this book of the law, meaning the Bible, shall not depart from your mouth. But you should do according to everything that's written in it, and then your way will be prosperous, and everything you do, you'll have success. I used to read that as a young man and think, great. I'm gonna do what's in the Bible, and I'm going to be successful and prosperous, because I thought success and prosperity meant money. And you do too. How do you use the word success in a sentence? He has a successful business. He is a success. And you are using that word simply around the fact that they've made it. They've got the financial trapping. You use the word success in a sentence about the UPS guy that comes to your house. What about the butcher or the grocer or the postman? We don't really, see, we equate success to the vocations that generate income. But the true definition of success is when you make good progress in accomplishing a desired end or aim. You know, God has an interesting sense of humor. Somebody mentioned money in your marriage. Joe and I wrote that book back in 1989. And I had a client over in Guess in Alabama, and I was leaving town one day over there, and I went into the Christian bookstore. This is right after the book came out in the summer of 89. And I went into the bookstore, and it says, you have money in your marriage, and they'd never heard of it. So I'm driving back, and I come through Cartersville, Georgia, and I'm just driving down the main street, and there's a Christian bookstore there, so I whip in to the parking lot, and I walk into the store. Say, do you have money in your marriage? And I go, never heard of it. I was walking out of that store, and it's like God tapped me on the shoulder and said, Russ, what do you do? Go in every bookstore in America and see if they have your book? Now, why was I doing that? What's the definition of success with books? Number sold. That's not God's definition. You are successful when you do and accomplish what God has called you to do. See, when I wrote the book that God put in my heart to write to help couples understand how to look at money as men and women, I did and completed it. I was successful, whether it sold one or the two copies that it sold. I was successful at that point. I mean, you are successful when you do what God's called you to do. It has nothing to do with money. See, go back to that verse. When you do according to all that is written in the Scripture, you're successful and prosperous. Guess what? When you work heartily for your employer, which it says in Colossians 3:23, do your work heartily as unto the Lord, you're successful. Man, when you love your wife, you're successful, because that's what the Bible says to do. But do we walk to people and say, man, you are a success. I see how you love your wife, or I see how you train your kids. We don't do that, do we? We don't use success in the right context, about the right things. It's all about business. It's all about money. It's all about the trapping. Money is not a measure of success. Success and prosperity had to do with when you do and accomplish the goal that you have. Money may or may not, you know, you can be rich and successful, but you can be successful and not rich. They don't go together. That doesn't mean you can't have money. See, riches and wealth, you can have it and be successful, but you can be successful without it. And you're successful as you do according to what God has called you to do. And I love that, you know, because I know if I love my wife, I'm a success. Doesn't matter how much I make in business. I know if I train my kids, which it says in Scripture, train them as you walk by the way, as you rise up and you lie down, I'm successful. Guys, I'm just going to be candid with you. The next time you hear the word success come across your lips, I hope you stop and see how you use it, because you won't use it right. You'll hope you catch yourself. You know, they may have a successful business. They may have some riches coming out of that business. But that's not necessarily success. That makes sense to you? Success and prosperity have to do with accomplishing a desired end or aim. You may or may not have riches and wealth. Okay, let me keep going here so I won't run out of time. Got to think right about money, guys, to have a hope to get balanced in your life. It's not a measure of success. It's not a guarantee of contentment. It's not a reward for godly living, and it's sure not a measure of self-worth. Let me give you one other thing that's relatively new to our society, and that we don't think right about retirement. Here's how to think about this. One of the reasons we're out of balance is we're hurrying up to quit. You know? We're just in a hurry to quit. You know what they say? You quit and you blow out an aorta on the way to Florida. And so let me give you a little history about retirement. And I'm a financial guy too. You're saying, man, financial guy, this and retirement? Let me just talk about it a minute. The Social Security Act of 1933 really ushered in this whole concept of retirement, because back then, after the Depression, they wanted to get the young guys back into the workforce and the old guys out. So it's at retirement age of 65 when life expectancy was 41. Now, the picture of a retired person in the 40s was of a grandmother eating Friskies in an apartment. It wasn't pretty. Well, then what happened in the 40s and 50s, the union started getting a hold of it, and it was easier to get concessions and off-balance sheet stuff with pensions than it was salary increases. So they really began to promote the whole private pension sector. So the whole concept of retirement and pensions began to take shape. And then the marketers got a hold of it. And what'd they do to it? They changed it from a grandmother eating Friskies in an apartment to what? The tan couple on the beach. Or the couple up in the mountains playing golf. And so not only do we have enough trouble balancing life, but now we've added this dimension of being in a hurry to quit. So we've shortened our time horizon, 55, 50, 60. So now, man, I've got to work harder and run faster because I've got to hurry up and quit and then do what? Man, I don't care if you fund retirement, if you've got plenty of margin, if you look up at the, but you know what? Your wives can't buy kids clothes with retirement. I've seen it time and again. Honey, look here, I got $300,000 in my 401k. Yeah, I got no money in the bank. I see it all the time, and there's no peace of mind. There's no balance. There's no nothing. You have no cash, but you've got a big retirement plan. Had a guy come in once. He had $80,000 in 401k and $80,000 in credit card debt. Well, that's zero net worth, right? Okay? But I would say the emotional stress, all I'm saying to you is you've all bought into it. And some of you should maybe back down your retirement funding a little bit and put some money in the bank. Or pay off the home debt so you can take a little less stress off the earnings. And I understand the principle. If you start putting $2,000 in IRA when you're 25, you'll have way more if you wait till 35 to start. But you know what? This isn't about how much I have in my retirement plan. It's how much life I have getting there. You with me? Now hear me real clear, because I get misunderstood. If you have plenty of margin and you want to fund the retirement plan, and guess what? There's no unattractive temptation. Your employer matches you. I understand it's tough. I mean, Russ, I should walk away from a match? I would say if you don't have any money in the bank and you've got debt, then you really need to look at the retirement thing and ask yourself, why am I doing it? Because guess what, guys? You aren't going to quit anyway. Your wife's going to kick you out after about 3 days. You know, when you decide to tire and hang it up, she's going to say, go do something. You know, she's going to, and you're going to want to. God made you that way. They've done studies. You know, when you quit completely, you die. So we've got to extend our time horizon. See, the longer your time horizon, what? The better chance you have to have some balance. So hear me correctly on this, and I'm not against retirement, but I'm against retirement when it exacerbates the pace of your life, when it puts more stress on you financially, and when it doesn't enable you to have some time when you need it. See, my parents, I mean, I grew up on a farm in Kansas. They aren't sitting there saying, well, I got to hurry up and quit. They plan on farming their whole life. You need to plan on working your entire life. And you know what? If you happen to accumulate and you can change what you're doing and all that, that's great. But don't. And help your kids understand this. Because they're putting undue stress on themselves to try to fund education, fund retirement, and all this stuff, and still raise your grandkids. Why? Retirement has just exacerbated the problem, is my whole point. And the final reason, and the final place we need to think right, is about our kids. Resist the urge to think you have to give your kids all the stuff you didn't have. What your kids need is more of what you had to go through to learn character. You know, I didn't talk about this, but social and spiritual capital, especially social capital are the character qualities necessary to be effective in society. And the best way for our kids to build social capital is to learn how to work. So why are you out of balance building up trust funds and trying to give them all this stuff? They don't have to do what you had to do to build the character you built. I mean, many of you have made it and have learned things and are productive in society because you didn't get it handed to you. And yet I see many men out of balance trying to give their kids all this stuff that they didn't have and what their kids really need. Isn't it interesting? If you have a whole bunch of money, you almost have to act like you don't have it. So if you don't have it, you may be wealthier than you think. Think about that. Let me give you another little sentence to write down. Measure wealth by the things you had that you would not take money for. See, I work with people who have a lot of money, but money's not always cracked up to be. Because once you have a lot of money, well, how do I keep from ruining my kids? How do I help my kids have a work ethic? Measure wealth by the things you have that you would not take money for. Many of you think that if I just had more money, it'd be easier. No, when you have more money, it gets harder. Because the very thing I want to build into my kids is sometimes impacted if I have too much money. So the whole point here is, you sure shouldn't be out of balance having more stuff and trying to build bigger piles. Now, if you have bigger piles and God's just blessed you, you have a lot of money, then you have other issues to deal with. That's why people like us are in business, help people try to wrestle with those things. But you sure shouldn't think, gosh, I just got to work harder here, work the second job and all that, because I got to give my kids. I got to give my kids this. No, you don't. What your kids need is more of you and less of your stuff. And guess what? Kids don't care where they live. You and I care where we live. In America is the only country that has starter homes. You know that? Yeah, we're going to get a bigger house. You know, you get a bigger house and then a bigger house. Houses are the number one thing to keep a strain on your finances. And you know what? You buy that great big one, there's just two of you rattling around. And kids don't care. We say, well, we got a bigger house. Kids got to have a bedroom and all this. Kids don't care where they live. You and I care because our self-image, our self-worth, we've bought those lies I talked about earlier. So guys, here's the big picture. Big picture is we can get balance. We can begin to slow it down. We can begin to have life back. But we have sure got to change our thinking, and the world isn't helping us. You know, our employer does match us, you know, two for one, and it's tough. You mean back down on my 401k funding and pay off debt to have less stress on my finances? Russ, I don't know. You mean I really don't have to be stressed out about giving my kids, you know, private school education and funding all their college and all that? No, you really don't. What if they had to work a little bit? What's the worst thing that happens to your kids if they have to work? What's the worst thing? Oh, they might build some character. Really bad thing, right? So I would hope that as you leave here this morning, you're challenged a little bit with a different way of thinking about this whole thing called money. Because you walk out there, the stress... Everybody else is thinking different about it. They're thinking, man, I just build it and then I retire and I can go play golf and I want to have that second home at the beach and all these things. You need to stop and think, you know, no, how do I get my life? How do I manage my money so I can have control of my life? And I think it starts up here. It starts with thinking right. See, once I began to understand these principles years ago, as I worked with couples, I told Julie, I said, honey, the reason we're on a budget is not to have more money. The reason we're on a budget is to have more time. The reason we live where we live and the reason we drive where we drive is to have more time to invest in people. First and foremost, my kids, and secondarily, others. Let me open it up just for a couple minutes of questions if you have any. Or clarifications. Yes, sir. Well, that's a good question, and I would say to that person, it's never too late. You start modeling it where you are, but then help your kids. You know, there's things you can do with your money to help your kids not do what you did. So I would say, you know, you start where you are. And that's the neat thing about all this is once you understand truth, you know, then you start dealing with it where you are. So let's say I'm 55 and, man, I've had the ladder against the wrong tree and I've masked all this and all that. You know, hey, it's okay. And I come back and say, all right, how do I now invest my life in people, in my kids, in my grandkids, and how do I help them not make the same mistake I made? You know, there's things you can do with your money to help your kids have more options and have more time. That's what I would say, just to wrestle with that. We have a lot of grandparents that we work with, and that's what we help them with. Other questions? Yes, sir. Yeah, I'm not opposed, and back to what I said about how to use money. If you want to help with a house down, see, if you help with a house down payment or even help with a house to be debt-free, then what you've done, you've made it possible for them to take the income they make, doing whatever God's called them to do, and live within it. What you don't want to do is do a subsidy on a monthly basis. You don't want to take away that work and that provision drive, especially of your son or your son-in-law, to provide the basic monthly stuff. So there's a difference between a one-time capital amount to help with a house or make the mortgage less than just enough that they don't have to work. So that's a fine line. Here's the thing. And this is where you need somebody to kind of look at it with you. You want to err on the side of giving your kids less rather than more early on. And then once they've learned to work and provide and feel good about themselves, then you can maybe give them some more later. It's interesting. I'm glad you mentioned that. We don't realize that marriage is hanging the balance about how we deal with money and our kids. But every one of us as men has a drive to feel good about ourselves and provide. We don't want to take that away from our sons, and we sure don't want to undermine that in our son-in-laws, because if we do, it'll impact their ability to love their wife, your daughter, or your daughter-in-law, because it'll impact the way they feel about themselves. So this is a very delicate balance, about how you leave money and how much and when. And I think as long as you're wrestling with it, you'll make the right answers. Most of us don't even think about it. They're just, here it all is, and we don't understand the impact it has on our on the future marriages down the road. Yes, sir. The question is, how do you stay accountable? I think, and this young gentleman shared with me here, the importance of being on a budget and what that's done for him. I think you all need somebody in your life in the financial area to look over your shoulder and say, hey, you're out of balance. You don't need to make that much money. Hey, you don't need to move into that house. You need somebody to look and make. The key is having a plus number in the margin column. So you need somebody to hold you accountable and make sure that number's plus. But then secondly, how plus is it? How big is it? And we've always said at Ronald Blue & Company, we're in business to help people make good financial decisions, hold them accountable to those, which leads to peace of mind. So you need somebody in your life to look in the eye and say, hey, you've got enough, or you can do some stuff different. And in my personal life, and we're a financial planning firm, we have somebody that does our planning, Julie and I. Even though I'm a financial planner, I have a guy in the firm that holds us accountable, sits down with me and says, hey, here's what it looks like. Here's what I think you ought to do. Guys, you should mistrust yourself in the financial area, because you can justify anything. You can. You can convince yourself you need that $3 million house. And I don't care if you need to have a three. I don't care what house, But you can convince, and the mortgage bankers will help you. But you need to mistrust yourself, because you can convince yourself of anything, and you need somebody to look over and say, why are you doing that? Because you can convince yourself that you need it. Or that, and so I would just say you've got to have another man in your life that can really ask you the question. Isn't it interesting that we are, there's one lady here, so she'll have to pardon me on this, but we are so funny about our money. Think about this. You go to the sporting events, and you go into the men's bathroom, and the guys are standing right behind you, right? You're going to the bathroom. But you go to the ATM machine, they're 20 yards back. You ever notice that? You know what I'm talking about? You go into the men's restroom, and man, everybody's panned right up behind you, but you go by the ATM machine, everybody's like, and the guys are there getting his money, and the guy's 20, get a big line. We're more screwed up about our money. And so you need somebody. It's not taboo. We as men have kind of been taught, we don't talk to people about our money, because we're supposed to know this, and boy, I'm not going to open my life up here. Open your life up to somebody in the money area. Reveal that debt. Reveal that stuff and say, hey, I need accountability. All right, probably enough of that. I've probably used up my time. Gentlemen, thank you very much, and I hope that you're challenged with a different perspective. And guys, it's not too late to get balance in your life.